The other interesting thing is a lot of police agencies approach me after my presentation on both days and ask me all sorts of information, some of which I was willing to give them freely. All of them wanted to see my plan. And I said, no, no one sees the plan. Well, we're the law enforcement agencies. And I said, it doesn't really make any difference. No one is seeing that plan. That plan was for me to prove to myself how easy it is and how vulnerable we are. And I will refer to that in future meetings and future conferences.
Certainly. Mr. Bell, in terms of the crisis in Syria, should Canada allow any more migrants into this country today, considering circumstances pertaining to the issues involving terrorism?
The current refugee crisis is being driven by a number of the key issues, including the sudden rise of ISIS in Syria and Iraq, the inability of the US and its allies to significantly degrade ISIS's capability, and the third thing is Germany's sudden announcement that they were going to take in 800,000 migrants. This decision, when it was made by Germany, suddenly prompted Turkey to immediately start emptying out some of its refugee camps, which was counterproductive to what they were going to do. I'd just like to refer to a passage in the Quran which openly encourages Muslims to immigrate to more prosperous countries and set up their own communities and societies. And then over time, through intermarriage and higher than usual birth rates, become sufficiently numerous to openly be capable of challenging and ultimately taking over those countries, turning them into de facto Muslim states, which they could then rule through Sharia law. By its sheer brutality and effective messaging, ISIS has been effectively forcing Muslims of all sects, as well as other religious groups, to leave their own countries and seek refuge in other countries, predominantly Western countries, which is causing quite a lot of concern at the moment, and it's getting more and more. They reckon there is another million refugees getting ready to springboard into the EU. You will notice that these refugees and migrants are not going to other Middle Eastern countries, where the culture, language and religion is the same. On September the 5th, the unfortunate photograph of a little boy who drowned with his mother trying to get into the EU was broadcast around the world, and the world decided at that particular time to spring into action. The question I asked at the time was why. The Syrian war itself began in 2011 as a result of the Arab Spring, which started in Tunisia. UNICEF reported early August of this year that over 11,900 children had been killed, and at the same time, nearly 8,000 women had been killed in Syria. Why all of a sudden does the picture of a small boy who'd been drowned on the beach suddenly make the whole world decide that they wanted to do something about it when all those children had already been killed in advance? Hundreds of thousands of refugees in the Middle East war zones and Africa are now swamping the EU's ability to effectively control migration into their own countries. No other Arab countries except for Jordan, the Lebanon and Turkey have offered to allow refugees from these countries to migrate to countries in the region. Unlike other cultures and religions, today's refugees do not share the same religious and cultural values of Western countries, and therefore they will face formidable barriers in trying to assimilate. The current influx of refugees at the moment is 75% of the migrants, and I believe most of them are economic migrants. So 75% are men of military age, not with families. 13% are children and 12% are women. And 51% of the refugees are Syrian, and the remainder are from wars around the Middle East, Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq, Tunisia, and Africa. So one of the problems we have is a significant number of these refugees are refusing to be photographed or fingerprinted. And we all know that if you travel around between different countries, you need some type of identification, be it a passport or a visa or both. So why are these people don't want their photographs taken, and why don't they want their fingerprints taken? A considerable number of governments are now beginning to fully realize the problems that they're going to ensue now with having this mass migration into their countries, and they have a total inability to be able to control them. And the other problem they have as well is they can't execute an ad hoc fast-track refugee program, which various different countries are suggesting to do, is because ISIS has already declared they will use this as a means to get into the West and open a jihadist pipeline. So this is another problem. And we saw examples of this during our general election, when we had the three leaders of the political parties all coming up with different ideas. And it was only really the Prime Minister at the time who said, we've got to slow down, we've got to make sure we do this, while the other political parties wanted to bring in 25 to 30,000 refugees and then worry about carrying out security clearances, which is really putting a lot of the Canadians who live in Canada at risk at that particular time, because it was a knee-jerk reaction to the photograph of the young boy. The numbers are irrelevant, how many people we take. For humanity reasons, we need to help, obviously, and we need to bring in people. But we can't bring in all these people in groups of thousands for two reasons. One, the security issues, and particularly if they're all young men, military age, families. And what has happened in the past is we've used the UN as the first line of sort of protection at the refugee camps in these countries around the world. I'm not just talking about this, the Middle East, and talking about other countries as well. And then we do our selection and we do our investigation into refugee camps, where we're guaranteed these people are in fact refugees, and they don't have iPhones, and they don't wear Gucci shoes, and they don't have handbags, and some of the women have got diamond earrings and everything else. And then we bring those people to Canada, but we do it in a controlled manner. And my fear is we're not going to do that. We're just going to rush to help. And because, you know, majority of Canadians care about the humanity of all this, and that is fine, but very few of them are thinking about the security issues. And as a security consultant, obviously that's my main concern. So we will take a significant number of refugees, and hopefully the new government in Canada will ensure that the security assessments and checks have been made before they come to Canada.
Mr. Bell, in terms of the security assessments that are done in Canada today, how would that compare to the assessments that are currently done in the United States of America?
Both countries have various different ways of doing these. The US will bring in significant amounts of refugees, and they, before they come in, they establish the fact outside the US that they are refugees. They're not economic migrants, which is probably 70% of the people in Europe at the moment are economic migrants. We do most of our due diligence in the refugee camps around the world. We don't take people off planes, because to get on a plane, you've got to have a passport and a visa, depending on what country you're coming from. The Americans, when people come over and destroy their passports on the planes, they go straight into a detention center, which is not as bad. It's not a small cell where, like a prison, but it's a detention center where they can be controlled. In Canada, we have a different way. After extensive interviews initially at the airport, they're sent to live in a fairly nice home. There's about four of them in Toronto, and they're given X amount of money. I don't know how much money they're given, and they're told to report back in 2 weeks for further evaluation. Well, a bad guy is now in Canada. If he doesn't show up for that evaluation 2 weeks later, that individual has gone and is now blended into Canadian society. And if you think back a few years ago, a couple of the people who were caught in the US trying to perpetrate terrorist attacks, those individuals entered Canada illegally. They got through the system. They lived in Canada. One of them lived in Montreal for a number of years before perpetrating this attack in Seattle, or attempting to perpetrate an attack in Seattle. So we have examples of where our system does not work. And we've done very little. We fine-tuned it and we've tweaked it here and there. But it needed a big review. And this was like 6-7 years ago. And we haven't changed very much the past. Once again, we don't realize what we're trying to do. We care more about human rights, which is obviously very important. But we seem to give people the opportunity. And we are a soft touch to a lot of countries around the world who want to come and live in Canada, or use Canada as a springboard to get into the U.S.
In terms of protecting Canada, I do agree with you. I do feel that Canadians should take the preventative action of preventing the possibility of another terrorist attack by ensuring the security of the nation by fingerprinting and by identifying who it is that is entering our country. I do also strongly feel that if that's not done, then there's no means of ensuring the identity of the individual who's actually accessing our country. At the same time, I think more Canadians should look to places such as the United States and perhaps follow security measures that have been established by the Americans. today, what would you say are some of the most concerning security-related risks companies face as a result of the ongoing challenges? At the same time, how has that evolved over the past 10 years?
I do a lot of work for natural resource companies. Natural resource companies, whether they're mining or they're oil or they're gas, go to countries where normal people don't go to access those natural resources. Over the years, obviously, the world has changed significantly and people respected Canadians for what they were and there was virtually no problems. In the last decade, particularly since 9/11, there has been a change. And obviously, I work outside Canada the majority of my time, and I've seen this. And what happens is companies don't realize there has been this change around the world. And some of the countries where they are now operating are very dangerous countries because there's either terrorist groups or there's sympathizers, and they seem to forget about the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist group situation. I mean, Al-Qaeda was the word everyone's been using for over a decade now. But Al-Qaeda were beginners compared to ISIS. I mean, they did not commit the brutalities that ISIS has committed. And they did that for a reason. They wanted to drive people away, and they wanted to drive them into the West, and so on and so forth, and spread the caliphate, which was declared, a couple of years ago. So that's one of the issues we've got. Companies are not prepared or ill-prepared. I had an incident of a mining company executive who I briefed, and he was going into Africa to do an assessment. And I told him that, he should fly in, do his assessment, and fly out by helicopter. He said, no, I want to see the country. I want to see the lions and the elephants and everything else. Well, 4 days into his trip, the vehicle he was traveling in was found full of bullet holes. His body was never found. It still hasn't been found to this day. So consequently, he was ambushed by a tribesman. He was ambushed by militias. He was trying. They don't know. They have no idea, except for the fact that I'm sitting in his office in Toronto telling him what not to do. He totally disregarded what I said and went and got himself killed. And his body has never been found. And of course, his family are left without a father, without a husband, etc., etc. We've done too little, too late. When I speak to clients and they ask my advice, we do an assessment, we do a country briefing. We tell them what the circumstances are. The certain countries I would never go and work in. Why? Because I will not send my guys to work in any country which I wouldn't go to myself. And that includes Somalia, northern Nigeria, Sudan. And the reason why, it's not the fact they're dangerous. In fact, the reason is there's no functional government to be able to deal with if you get into trouble. So if three of your guys get kidnapped, who are you going to talk to get a resolution or pay a ransom or whatever you want to do? So consequently, these are the countries that I would not work in. Now, Somalia has calmed down a little bit. Sudan is getting worse. And other countries. I was asked early this year, I went to the Yemen in the early part of this year to look at a project. And I looked at the project, and while I was there, the Hutus started rebelling against the government. And there was car bombs, and 40 people got killed, and all this. And I realized that. So when I left and came back, I said to the client, if I was you, I would really think again about going and carrying on work in the Yemen, and maybe take a sabbatical for 12 months and see how it turns out. If you go in there now, you're risking being kidnapped by Al-Qaeda. You're risking being killed by the various different militias that are now working. Yemen is totally dysfunctional. So my advice is not to do that. What did they do? Put a team in there to start working.
Then what happened?
They're still working there.
Still working.
Yeah. So that gives you another example of me. It's like paying a lawyer $500 an hour to tell you don't break the law, and then you go and break the law. I mean, I find it really amazing. If someone warns me off, all right, I don't always believe them, but then I'll do my own research and realize this individual who I hired to advise me knows what he's talking about. Maybe I shouldn't go to this country wherever it is, or at least leave it for a little while and see how things turn out. But unfortunately, particularly natural resource companies, they want to go out there because most of the normal places where you go in and look and get natural resources out of the ground, no matter what it is, have already been used. So now you've got to go to more dangerous, more isolated locations around the world. And the race is on to get there first because we are running out of everything.